All right, direct from the British Broadcasting Corporation. sounds a bit different when you say it like that, doesn't it?
It's probably not the nicest thing.
You'll be getting an MBE next.
Oh, yeah.
Brendan Devaney joins us now ahead of the DL debate tonight on Highland Radio. Fresh off, and I'm going to put a picture up for those watching, fresh off your coverage at the weekend with BBC Sport. Nice gig, Brendan. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I think it was very different from radio. I have done a wee bit of All-Star TV streaming and that, but particularly myself and Oisin there, the radio... You kind of create the picture, and there's a bit more to it. Like, obviously, TV's a bit different, but I was up in studio, and I went running down to Thomas Inn in the wee gantry, you know, and there was equipment everywhere, and I had notes and program and a wee clipboard, and there was nowhere to put it. And then the rain came in on top of us, and I was like, this is a bad start.
It's a different play-by-play, isn't it, as you say, because, you know, you don't necessarily need to describe everything. I think maybe the biggest difference would be for the play-by-play commentator, but even as a analysis, you don't want to patronise the viewer or state the obvious. You have to sort of come at it from you have to accompany the image, not replace the image.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a different thing, I suppose. You're looking at maybe wee tactical moves in the game, or where, you know, points started, was there an interception, what's happening with kickouts or shapes of the team or different things. But listen, it was grand. The game itself was poor, Greg, which didn't help. You know, if you've got an exciting game, you can get a bit excited about the commentary, but the game was very, very poor. And we're actually seeing, you know, bits of that in different games around the country where there's a bit of an unmatched element to the teams. I mean, we've seen some decent games, you know, particularly in Leinster at the weekend, because they were tight games and there was not much between the abilities of the two teams. But yesterday, Tyrone were operating at a complete different level. Now, that said, I mean, Antrim put it up to Armagh on Saturday. So we were thinking that gap that Antrim bridged to Armagh, certainly there isn't that gap. Cavan could have very easily found themselves in Division 1, and Tyrone, of course, were relegated, maybe unlucky. So we were hoping for a good match. I mean, last year they drew, Tyrone beating them in the replay, remember, which kind of zapped the Tyrone boys, because when it went the extra time with us the following week, they definitely ran out of legs. But yesterday, as I say, Tyrone were just toying with Cavan, and Cavan.
So, are you underplaying the fight back from Cavan that Tyrone resisted? Do you think that pretty much, I suppose, like Donegal in their last outing against Derry, were just able to step on the gas when needed?
Yes, exactly. Again, there was a couple of bad wides from Tyrone in that time. I think you could see them maybe five or six in a row, to a couple of brilliant two pointers from McVitie, but I think Tyrone at that stage had stopped playing, you know, in terms of they were just kind of seeing out the game, trying to keep Cavan at arm's length. Now, in fairness to Cavan, with a couple of brilliant two-pointers in that second half, they did come back and did a bit, but you were just waiting for the change. And, of course, Tyrone bench even coming on, you've seen the squad that they have. So, yeah, Tyrone looked really good yesterday. And you look at the two styles of the teams, like, you know, Tyrone playing that zonal defence like what we play. They were two and three players hitting Cavan lads when they came in, and Cavan were man for man. It was all too easy for the Tyrone forwards. They just had to beat one man and they were in for a score, and as I say, I'm really surprised at how one-sided the game was. Very, very poor crowd as well.
Yeah.
That's another thing. You've mentioned it a few times about week on week in the league and what we're asking of supporters, and then we're straight into the Championship, and I really got the feeling that, you know, we've seen so many packed games, or really, really big games, because top teams have been playing each other. I got the sense from Cavan supporters yesterday, they didn't have much belief, so they never really followed the team yesterday. And you had a poor crowd, I think it was 7,000, which is poor.
It is interesting, because the thing about the league, and almost like, you know, if the league can't be the Championship, but we're accustomed to seeing well-matched teams. And then you go, then that ends, even though the management play around with squads and stuff, but then you get back into this sort of mismatch stuff. The terrible crowd in Connacht as well, Mayo Sligo, crappy game, crappy crowd. You know, we're kind of on a high here as well, and you sort of think every Championship game's going to be packed and you can't get a ticket for any game, and then sort of the reality hits. Armagh play Tyrone next, don't they? So what have we learned from either team? What have we learned about both teams heading into that big clash, which is a battle of a big two?
Yeah, very little, to be honest, Greg, I would say. I mean, really, and I really admire Antrim so much for putting it up to Armagh for first sticking to their guns and making sure the game was played at their home venue, Carrigan Park, because the GAA switched to the Park Essler and down. And when you look at Casement Park, for example, and what happened there, Greg, there's no way Casement should have been closed until everything was a done deal for the redevelopment. They closed it, and then they went through a process, which was a disgrace. And on top of that, whenever that did happen, Corrigan Park should have been built up to a level of a 10 to 12,000 all season. Antrim GAA, Ulster GAA and Croke Park should have got together. And, you know, you're on about the biggest city in the whole province and having a 4,000. I mean, Greg, there's no way that would happen in the likes of Connacht or Munster and Leinster. Not a chance, but it was allowed to happen in Ulster, as I say. So, you know, that was something that Antrim had to do. But listen, they made a game of it. We did.
That's Brendan gone, because I think his battery either went flat or he pressed the gone button. But I think we got most of it there, didn't we? So if Brendan gets back, I think we've covered most of what we were going to discuss in any case. Just to let you know, Brendan Devaney's guests tonight on the DL Debate are Shawnee Johnson, ex-Cavan footballer, and also we also have... Oh, he's coming back in. Hi, Brendan. How are you getting on? I kind of says I wasn't going to come back to you, but I saw you fiddling with the phone and your sausage fingers pressed the quit button.
Greg, do you know what? That was one of my guests. I was going to say to you, I'm still finalizing the show. That was one of my guests. I tried to knock him off and I accidentally put him on.
But so we know Shawnee Johnson's on anyway.
Johnny Johnson's on, ex-Cavan guy. He was there with me yesterday. Yeah, Paul Finley's on, ex-Monaghan star. And of course, Paul Durkin, from one of our heroes from 2012, he's on. So I'm looking to speak to Mickey McCann as well. And we're going to do maybe a look at the senior club, maybe the new rules and what's happening in there. Kilkerr having a real rough time early on in the league. Greg struggling for numbers.
I think one of the problems that game might come across is not having Hooters. I don't think there's the Hooters are at a game. The clock is stopped, and I wonder, is there a bit of confusion as to how much is left in a game for senior footballers now at this point? Do you know, because they're watching the senior game, you know, we're watching the inter-county stuff and the stop clocking and the hooter going. It's obviously not happening at club level. I wonder, is it? I mean, obviously you always should play to the whistle, but is that a factor at all?
No, it's just old rules for that. Listen, the ref keeps an eye on it. He stops at any given time. And then, you know, there's a certain amount allotted for, like, subs coming in and out. But listen, it's the same as before. You'll have your couple of minutes added time down the ref's discretion. So, listen, I think that'll be a fine. That'll be a side of it that's grand. It's just for the ref to be aware of everything that's happening on the pitch at the one time. It is a very difficult proposition. But I think we have to kind of... just, you know, do our best to roll with it, because the new rules are needed. But as we're seeing in certain games, Greg, they actually can turn, you know, a side that's like a bigger team can actually destroy a smaller team, particularly on the kick-out.
And that was always the threat, wasn't it? That was always the concern. And just briefly, you're going to be chatting to Paul Finley and Paul Durkin, as he says, what do Monaghan bring to the party next week? We know what Donegal bring to it. What do Monaghan bring?
Listen, they went down one season. They've been in the top flight for 10 or 11 years. They did toy with going down a few times, but there's something about Monaghan. You know, they're plucky. They always, like, for the population, they play at a serious level. Right? So they're down one season, come back up as champions. So, you know, Gabriel Bannigan's in there, new manager, and they have a lot of talented players, you know. Fast forwards, they have a good bench. Big Beggins in there as well. So I think they'll relish coming to play Donegal. So listen, this, I think that's going to be a great game. And you're on about some of the lopsided natures. You know, down at Fermanagh will be playing this week. But certainly those big games, Donegal, Monaghan, particularly Tyrone, Armagh, they're massive games. Greg, I just want to mention the hurlers yesterday, Greg, in the Christy Ring first game. They're obviously walloped by Derry a few weeks ago in the league. At home, they're away. This time, they're beat by 20 points. Listen, it was 5 points. Yesterday, in a very spirited performance from our hurlers. So, you know, that was open Christy Ring game. They're on there with Meath, Tyrone, London, and Wicklow. They play Wicklow at home next week in Letterkenny. I think it's Saturday. So, listen, well done to the lads, because Derry are by far the top team in that. So, huge performance from our hurlers. Yep.
And progress. Okay. All of that tonight on the DL Debate. Brendan Devaney, thank you very much indeed. Take care of yourself. That's at 7 o'clock live. and of course available shortly thereafter in a podcast. Now, Dr. Niamh Hamill is founder and academic director of the Institute of Study Abroad Ireland. You may have heard of the electronic travel authorisation, but have you considered what impact it may have on those of us living in the Northwest? Dr. Niamh, good morning to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Hello there, Greg. How are you?
Good, thank you, Niamh. So what is the electronic travel authorisation and what impact might it have on people traversing the border?
So this is a new travel permit that the UK brought in. So if you go through the UK, you have to pay £10 sterling for permission. And it also applies to people who go through the north. So if you get a bus from Dublin to Bundoran, you're supposed to have it. So really what that means is that travellers, visitors who maybe come to Dublin and decide that they might go to Donegal for a day trip or something like that, suddenly they'll be faced with this requirement to go online, fill out an app with their passport details and all of that, and then pay a fee, even though they're not getting out of the car. So what it is actually having an impact, because we've seen it already, is that we're getting emails from people who have planned a trip from the United States and they're alarmed by this requirement and they want to know, do they need it? And it also means that people who might make an impulsive decision to head for the Northwest suddenly are faced with this requirement. So I think what they will do is they'll decide not to go to Donegal, to go somewhere that doesn't involve all the hassle.
And what we have to factor in is a lack of local knowledge to it. You travel to another country, like say, for instance, if I went to Spain and a similar situation applied to Portugal, I'm not going to risk the wrath of the local police. I'm going to follow the advisory to the letter of the law, whether I get my pass or whether I go, you know what, it's not worth the hassle. You know, people coming here will adhere to it. So, sorry, Niamh, just in my reading of this, I didn't really quite realise that. So if I go into Derry to shop, am I, by the letter of the law, supposed to seek this electronic travel authorisation?
If you don't have an Irish or a UK passport.
Yeah, okay.
So you
right,
and I
do.
Can go
I'll
to Derry.
You. Sorry, I beg your pardon.
But if you're, if you're an American visitor and you decide to go into Derry, you're on holidays in Donegal.
Understood.
And you decide to go in to see the Free Derry Museum or something like that, you're required to have it.
Or you get a bus from Donegal to Letterkenny. What about people working here that are working here on visas that might not hold... like, there is scenarios where there are people potentially living in Donegal, working in Derry, for an example, who might not be English or UK, Irish or UK citizens. Presumably, they're not... Are they exempt?
This is a tourism permit. It's for people who are coming on holidays.
Okay.
So I presume that people who are working on either side of the border have their own visa arrangements. I wouldn't know what they are.
Understood.
But this just means that the thousands of people who are coming into Ireland and are deciding where to go, if they decide that they're going to go to Donegal, you know, almost everybody who goes to Donegal is going to cross the border at some stage.
Mm-hmm. All right.
If you're coming from Dublin.
Okay. Yep. Sorry, Niamh, for not picking this up straight away. I do appreciate your clarification. It's a barrier, isn't it? We're a 32 county island.
Exactly.
In terms of tourism, that's how we market ourselves. Any barrier is going to have an impact. It's going to be hard to measure it because of the skewing of tourism numbers at the moment, but it's inevitable it will have some sort of an impact.
It is already having an impact, and we know ourselves from the communications that we're getting from the hundreds of people that come to us every year. They're concerned about it. It's an extra cost. There's a lot of hassle involved in actually filling out the it's digital. A lot of tour groups, for example, their tour operator will handle everything. They'll book the flights. Mm-hmm. They'll organise the accommodation. But you can't do it for this. Each individual has to download the app and fill it out for themselves. So tour operators are dropping their travel to the Northwest because for them, it's it's a whole extra workload plus it's expensive.
Yeah.
At the moment, that ETA is £10 sterling and it's supposed to go up to £16 sterling. So that's an extra $20 for your traveller. But what I'm really concerned about is this is going to impact Donegal.
Yep.
And you know, traditionally we have had all sorts of challenges trying to encourage tourism to Donegal. While there was a hard border there, we had that to cope with. Then we had Brexit and all the alarms around that. And we've been building up Donegal as a popular destination in the Wild Atlantic Way. Mm-hmm. And now this, you know, and there isn't any noise about it. And there should be.
How do we, I mean, obviously we have to make the noise and it makes a change. But I presume those, say, for instance, if you're using Heathrow, for an example, to travel through the United Kingdom, that you don't require one of these passes. Correct me if I'm wrong in that. Could that not be extended? But at the same time, too, we don't want to discourage people, do we, travelling from Dublin to Belfast? You know, I don't want to be selfish or parochial here and just thinking of traffic travelling through the north to us, if you know what I mean. But for the island of Ireland, really, we need an exemption that covers all scenarios.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that everybody in the north should be very alarmed by this idea as well, that visitors now are being presented with, you know, 26 counties if you're in the Republic, but then this extra ETA if you want to go north. I definitely think that. But I suppose from a more selfish point of view, it's not just the north that's going to be affected. Again, Donegal is going to be impacted because we are, you know, in the northwest. And
And bus tours you mentioned, and also too, it's laughable really, because they're talking about sort of extending the Wild Atlantic Way into the north from Donegal. Again, I'm trying to look at it from everyone's perspective. This notion that you'd have to pay a £10 tax to, if you were holidaying as a non-Irish UK passport holder, pay a tax to go from Lifford to Strabane is crazy to continue your tour.
Exactly. And it's actually raised the specter of a border again. You know, we've done so much to get rid of the border, get rid of the checkpoints. Even with Brexit, the big fight was not having any sort of a barrier in moving between the two areas. So why we've allowed this, you know, to kind of silently creep up is really beyond me. I don't know why.
I'm not criticising any group of politicians or what have you, but we do elect them to sort of keep an eye on these type of things too, I think, out of hope. You know, this doesn't really seem to be on the political radar either, particularly in the context of, you know, a shared Ireland.
The funny thing is, you know, that we went to a meeting about this and kind of what you're told is, look, nobody's going to check this. Don't worry about
it. Well, that's not if you travel.
And that's not okay.
It's like that scenario, you know, again. If I'm going to Portugal and I'm travelling into Spain, I don't want the police, local police, getting on a bus and saying, have you got your documents, and spending 3 days in a prison. That, none of that would happen, but that doesn't matter. I am, you know, when you're out of your own space and you're not familiar with the country.
Yeah, you want to do the right thing and make sure you have all the right. Yeah.
You can't just say, sure, look, no one's checking buses. Yeah. And also, too, you know, a coach company, a reputable coach company, will not want to be seen to nod and wink at the law either. For, you know, because it could be retrospective or, you know, so it's a big problem. All right, Niamh.
We have to tell all our people now that they need to get it, even though the only, like, we travel from Dublin to Donegal on a bus when our students arrive in Dublin, and they go through Enniskillen. So they need it for that. And we also do one of our days, we will take the groups to Derry, and they'll need it for that. So we have to tell them that they need it, even though nobody, absolutely nobody, is going to check this. So there's, you know, £10 sterling to the UK revenue for no reason at all.
All right. OK. Niamh, listen, we'll pursue that ourselves here, because we have to advocate on behalf of the businesses and the tourism providers. And
exactly.
It just takes one bus that was going to land in Malin, for an example, not to turn up, and then all of a sudden it becomes a big deal, if that makes sense. Thanks for the heads up, Niamh. Sorry that I misread it. I was confusing it with something else we talked about a couple of years ago, but I appreciate you helping me through that, and thanks very much for your time.
Okay, thank you
all
very
right,
much.
All right, that's Dr. Niamh Hamill, founder and academic director of the Institute of Study Abroad. This electronic authorization is for those visiting this country. And of course, the Institute of Study Abroad Ireland would bring students into the country. This is about if you got on a bus in Dublin and travelled to Donegal via Cavan, which would be quite ordinary, you would be expected to have registered and paid for your electronic travel authorization. So Britain are introducing this for their own reasons. I presume the intent wasn't for this to be the case. But they're not going to change things, I don't think, until such time as people make a racket about it. Kieran Lavery is head PGA professional at Hollywood Golf Club and will be joining us, or is in fact joining us now. Good morning, Kieran. Thanks for your time. What a roller coaster ride. I don't even know if that sums it up, but it's the closest I can describe what we watched, not just actually yesterday at the Masters, but even day one, day two, three, and on to a very, very memorable day four. What an achievement for Rory McIlroy.
Yeah, it was great. It was great to see it.
Yeah, he played. Talk to me about the young Rory McIlroy and his time at Hollywood Golf Club and where this story started, because it's an amazing one. There's images of him chipping balls on couches, and we know the sacrifices his parents made to sort of help him to achieve this amazing milestone. Like, the story starts way, way back, doesn't it, Kieran?
Yeah, the buzz is great now, I have to say. Like, it's all go here this morning, like, and from late last night, it just seemed to have carried through, you know, a sort of bit of disbelief this morning, you know, trying to pinch ourselves to wonder, did it really happen? But yeah, here we are.
But you never doubted Rory, did you? Because, you know, it's 14 years in the making, effectively, this victory in the Masters. He's been chasing the Grand Slam, effectively, or another major for 11 years. And then when Thursday happened, it felt like, oh boy, here we go, another year down. What was your emotion after he finished his first round?
Yeah, it was sort of like, I suppose, watching it from a golf aspect. Like, after Thursday, I didn't think he hit a bad shot on Thursday during his whole round. Just, I feel he got unlucky Thursday for the couple of double bogeys. Like, so sort of thought he was still in it. Tried to convince a few members that he'd still win it on Thursday evening, but there wasn't too many believed in me. But luckily now, and Rory's just an incredible athlete, and his own belief in himself sort of carried him through, and it's great.
We know he's not motivated by money per se now, because he's very, very wealthy. And also he's achieved everything in the game but this. This was a life's work for him. It's not just one, you know, round of golf or 4 days of golf. This has been his life work to get to this position, and he's now one of only six people to ever achieve that. That cements his place in the history books.
Yeah, like it puts him in the history books as one of the greatest golfers to have ever played the game. In my opinion, the best golfer we'll see in our lifetime. And more than likely, the best athlete, the best sports person we'll see in our country.
What does it take to do what he did yesterday? We'll just focus on yesterday. He had the lead. He lost the lead. He regained the lead. He lost the lead. He knocked it into the water. He must have thought himself, oh boy, here we go. He rallied back from that. He missed a relatively short putt and then had to go all the way back to the 18th again, the 18th tee box. He could not have sort of really prepared himself for that scenario. What does it take to do what he did yesterday? He knows his swing, but I'm on about to keep the emotions and the mood in check to be able to do what he knows he can do. How tough is that? Because you play the game yourself. Even amateurs know what it's like if you've got a tricky putt. The nerves can get to you. But how did he control himself?
Yeah, I suppose it's like you said earlier, it's the years that it is in the making. I suppose all the hardships he's come through, the majors he's maybe lost, you know, the struggles. Well, we say struggles, like he's still won massive events throughout that time. They just didn't happen to be majors. But like, I suppose it's like Rory said earlier in the week, it's the failures sort of get you through and put you into position to be able to bounce back from the setbacks. I know he was working with Bob Rotella this week, the sports psychologist, but you have to wonder, even at that time, does it just come down to what you have inside you? And obviously what Rory has in him is is sort of different to everybody else, just making him one of those elite athletes.
Now he's got this sort of duck off his back or turkey off his back or whatever that phrase is. We don't know which way this goes. He could be unbridled now and go on and do a double Grand Slam, or you know, we simply just don't know what he wants out of the game or what he'll achieve in it. I'm not saying for a second he packs it in, but it'll be interesting to see what Rory McIlroy will see at the next major or next year at the Masters.
Yeah, like it's one of those things. Like, the first couple, like, he's won the Players' Championship this year, he's won Pebble Beach this year, now the Masters. Like, he's winning big events, and I don't think this is going to derail that. I think it's only going to encourage him more. Like, he is, in my opinion, and I suppose everybody else's, he is the best golfer in the world at the minute. And I said to a few members earlier, I reckon, in my own opinion, that he could hold all four majors at the end of the year.
Which would be a remarkable. He's just achieved a massive milestone, and you've just stuck another one in front of him there, Kieran. Would you give the man a break?
Yeah, it's we know his capabilities here, and I suppose everybody in the world knows. Like, it's who beats him.
Well,
who beats him? Like,
part of sport is that we have the people we love with the people we loathe, and it's only sport, and it's not meant with any real love is. But I'm just, you know yourself, Rory can be a bit divisive, right? You have a lot of people love him, and some people that he wouldn't be their favourite. We all have favourites in sport. It's very important, I think, though, that this achievement is recognised on the island of Ireland for what it is, if you know what I mean, and that even those that maybe aren't his biggest fans understand that what they witnessed yesterday is history. It's only happened, you know, twice in colour. Do you know what I mean? This is how rare the Grand Slam, the career Grand Slam is.
So people talk about Tiger and the impact he's had in the game and how he changed the game, how he's the greatest golfer ever lived, and there's no doubt in that. He's won 15 majors and multiple times, but Rory's just completed the same thing that Tiger has completed in the career Grand Slam, that Jack Nicklaus completed, that Gary Player completed. Like, this is monumental for golf in all over the world, never mind Ireland, you know. So I think it has to be recognised. It's just extraordinary.
Brilliant. Kieran, it's like everything, you know. I'm sure you have been inundated with calls and camera crews landing and everything. So thanks so much for your time. And I'm sure all your, you can call them patrons this week who are visiting the club will all want to go and see where it all started for Rory. Thanks so much for your time.
No bother. Thanks, Greg.
Take care of yourself. Kieran Lavery there, head PGA professional at Hollywood Golf Club. Of course, Rory McIlroy is no stranger to us here in the Northwest. He's played at the Rosapenna Golf Resort. And John Casey from Rosapenna joins us. Hi, John.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I am good. Just your reaction before we talk about the history. What he achieved yesterday, it is unbelievable, isn't it, really? It's almost inhuman in the modern game, but it's something else.
Yeah, it's immense, really, to think that he's only the sixth guy and the first European to win the Grand Slam. And obviously everybody knows what Tiger Woods means to the game of golf, and he's the next guy after Tiger almost 25 years later. It just shows, you know, Paul McGinley put it very well last night, that there are four very different examinations in golf, the four majors, and to have the game to win all four and to, you know, be able to change your game for each of the four majors and to be able to win all fours is an absolutely amazing achievement.
But to have the world's eyes glaring at you, you know, the gnarly man, he can't get over the line. The Masters is his bogey event. People almost expecting him to lead after two or three days and then fluff his lines. And he did fluff his lines a little bit on Sunday, no doubt about that, but he was able to bring it back round again. With that level of scrutiny, it makes it all the more amazing that he achieved it as he did.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, people say that the Masters, obviously, but he still hadn't won another major since 2014. So I think that was probably getting to him as well. And you could see the frustration last year at the US Open at Pinehurst when he kind of made a mistake coming down the last hole and then almost handed it to Bryson DeChambeau. And definitely you could see the frustration there. But I think if he had to pick any of them, without a doubt, it was to win the Masters. And you could see that down through the years. And obviously back in 2011 when he held the lead, and and things didn't go his way. So it's just, you know, or 2012, sorry, it was just really, really great to see him finally get over the line at Augusta and put on the green jacket.
Yeah, and to beat everyone over 4 days, effectively bar one, in strolls Justin Rose, 9 birdies on the day, playing some of the best golf of his life. He plays the 18th perfectly. Of course, he missed what is a 5.5-6 footer, right? But still, that left the pressure back on Rory McIlroy. You know, so even that one hole, I don't know how he keeps it together.
Yeah, he definitely had to regroup. I mean, he obviously went into the day with a 2-shot lead that evaporated in the first hole after that double bogey. And then, I mean, he had the 4-shot lead coming into the back nine. So, and then obviously he made the mistake on 13. So it was huge for him then to regroup again and go back to the 18th tee for the playoff. And I mean, he hit just a fantastic drive up 18 and then the wedge into 3.5-4 feet. And he gave himself, or even less, and gave himself the opportunity then just to finish it in the first extra hole was amazing.
Yeah, and anyone who watched that or even afterwards watched the footage of his walk back to collect his jacket, I've never actually seen a sports person in any sport whatsoever so visually react to an achievement. It was so evident as to what this meant to him.
Yeah, I mean, the only other one that comes close was Tiger back in 19 when he obviously went through all his troubles and his injuries through the years and then came back and won in Augusta. And we've seen that walk that he had from 18 green up to the scorers, up to the clubhouse. But McIlroy's definitely, you could just see the emotion on his face after what happened and when he almost collapsed on the green after he sank the putt and then came up and seen his wife and child and came through the galleries. It really was. And then, you know, him meeting Lowry and meeting everybody that he knew in the crowd, it was really great to watch. It was so cool just to see that he finally got over the line and what it meant to win at Augusta, to win the green jacket and to cap off the Grand Slam and the first Grand Slam in a very long time.
His history with Rosapenna goes back to 2005, and you walked with him. I don't know if it was in 2005 or 2007, but what do you remember of the young Rory McIlroy? He won in 2005, in the Scratch Club. What do you remember of him then? Was it obvious this was a very special talent?
Yeah, I mean, he came in 05 and again in 07. He won the tournament in 05. 07 was just a few weeks before he turned pro, and I'd say his mind might have been elsewhere with everything going on and getting ready to turn pro. But definitely in 2005, I mean, the talent that he had was, I mean, he was playing with the best players in Ireland at the time in Rosapenna, but you could see just the difference with McIlroy. I mean, it's 20 years ago, but he was so young. I mean, he was only 15 years old. And he was still just so much better than you know, just everything about how he played golf was very, course, very impressive.
Is it how he manages an unfamiliar course? Is it how he strikes the ball? Is it a combination of everything? Is it the swagger? What stood out for you as you walked alongside him?
I suppose ball striking, just how well he hit the golf ball, you know, just how high he hit the ball and how far he hit the ball, you know. You could just tell that his game was maybe designed and going to excel hugely in America whenever he went there. You know, he was just very, very, very good. And obviously as a 15-year-old kid that was very good, he was very confident. Mm. And that kind of shone through in his game as well. I mean, his putting and his short game back then was, you know, just amazing. Very, very good.
Brilliant.
Great to watch.
Would he be welcome back?
Of course, yeah, without a doubt.
Yes, of course, and he can bring all of his trophies. Brilliant stuff, and great
bring
memories.
Green jacket.
Bring his green jacket, indeed. Great memories, and I'm sure the clubhouse, or I suppose at that stage, maybe people had to watch at home. But anyway, I'm sure everyone associated with the club was chomping at the bit to see that. Things are going from strength to strength with the resort, John. Busy all year round, but heading into the busy season. Demand up where you'd hope it to be. It always is high, but, you know, with everyone talking about tourism and this, that and thon.
Yeah, I mean, golf's obviously boomed post-COVID. Golf's boomed, golf in Ireland's boomed, and Donegal's certainly, in my mind, busier than it was pre-COVID, so it's great. We see a lot of international tourists, a lot of international golfers will start to come now at the beginning of May, and that kind of runs through to the end of September. And then very much Irish golfers coming in the months of April and October. So it's great to see. But we have a great golf product here in Donegal, you know, in Portneau and Merva, Port Salem, Ballyliffin, ourselves. There's just some great golf courses, Critch Island. So it's somewhere that you can come and spend a week and play a different Lynx golf course every day. So there's no reason that it shouldn't be busy, but it's great to see the focus on Donegal, and we've people like Paul McGinley and Ballyliffin Golf Club, John Farron, to thank for, you know, bringing the Irish Open there back in 2018. The Open coming to Portrush in 19, returning in 25 is just absolutely huge for the whole Donegal region. And obviously Paul McGinley's now working in Murva Donegal Golf Club, doing a bit of redesign work, which is just shining the light again in Donegal. So it's just that trying to keep in the conversations of the travelling golfers what we're trying to do, and I think that's definitely what Donegal's doing.
Yeah, and in fairness, he's amazing. Well, I missed him actually on the play-by-play yesterday. I like listening to him, but anyway. Right, just one other question. Do we know if his round or his performance in 2007 at Rosspenna was his last before he turned over, or do we know that? Just to be nice for a quiz question.
Could well have been. I'm not sure. No, I think he played the Walker Cup.
Ah.
I think he played the Walker Cup a couple of weeks later, and then he turned pro, and he played in St Andrews. He finished third in St Andrews, and he obviously got his tour card very, very quickly. So I don't think so.
Right, okay. Well, close enough. John, listen, thanks for that. I appreciate the memories. Take care of yourself. That's John Casey from Rosspenna Golf Resort. A caller says, Rory McIlroy's achievement was a wonderful boost for Irish people everywhere and was well-deserved after failing 11 times. However, RTE seemed to be only interested in Rory and not bothered about Shane Lowry and how he was doing. In my opinion, Shane was in there with a shout, and I hope that someday, like Rory, he'll get to wear the green jacket. I get where you're coming from. And, you know, to be honest, the way golf is covered in sport, I find it a little bit frustrating because the default is that your favourite golfers are Irish, right? So they'll talk about a golfing tournament and they'll give you the leader and then say best of the Irish. But your favourite golfer could be, I was going to say Sergio Garcia, but he plays for Liv. You know, it could be somebody else, but there's a very parochial way of covering golf. So I would prefer, if I was listening to golf coverage, that you get the top five and then how the Irish are doing if they're not featuring in the top five. But Shane Lowry dropped away quite significantly yesterday, and I suppose it is the norm that you focus on those in the running. And he was in the running after 3 days, but as I say, he fell away quite quickly on Thursday. And you may Sunday, and you may have heard actually he hit out, and quite rightly so, in post-round interviews on Saturday, where he effectively says, look, I'm not going to sit here talking about Rory McIlroy for 10 or 15 minutes. I'm still in this competition. So he feels that frustration in himself. It's not just you potentially as a supporter that noticed that. Grania on email, I've been following Rory for all of his efforts over the years. He is a model for young people to never give up on their dreams. Although he nearly broke our hearts, he came through in the end. A necessary and an informative interview with Anne Gregg, and for your own insight into these horrible entities who prey on vulnerable people. Been there and still with them. We'll have to go on the scheme soon. Thank you. And I'm sorry if you are enduring. The defective concrete block nightmare. Right. Okay. As you would know, Gardaí and Donegal are investigating all of the circumstances surrounding the discovery of a body in Killybegs on Sunday afternoon at around 20 past 12 yesterday. Gardaí and emergency services responded to a report of a man found unresponsive at a residence on Harbour View Drive. Now, a man has been arrested, a man aged in his 60s, and is being detained at a Garda station under Section 4 of the Criminal Justice Act. That Garda investigation is ongoing. So as it is an active investigation, we, of course, are not going to talk about any elements of that. But, of course, it is a terrible event for the victim, of course, and those who would have known him. Councillor Niamh Kennedy is Cathaoirleach of Donegal County Council. And Councillor, this is the most tragic news to emerge from Killybegs yesterday afternoon, and I'm sure you know, lots of people are really quite moved by that. Not the type of thing you expect to happen in your area.
Yeah, absolutely, Greg. Good morning. Yeah, it's very somber today, I can tell you. It was just shocking, to say the least, to discover that this had happened in a quiet town, that this is not, as I say, not the norm around here, not the norm in many places. But I think it's absolutely shocking, considering the fact that he was well known, his family are well known. You know, they've lived here for many, many years, many decades, and it's just so disheartening to think that something like this could have actually happened in such a quiet area. The neighbours are all obviously in a lot of shock and distressed about it. And I suppose under investigation, we've seen plenty of Gardaí presence and plenty of presence from detectives and different units around town. So, yeah, our hearts are really going out to the families, and we just have to, at this point in time, just wait and see what the outcome of the investigations are. We are aware, obviously, that there has an arrest been made this morning.
And of course that process has to go on. Yeah. But I suppose, Niamh, there may be people in the area. Of course, like all housing estates, it's a quiet housing estate. This kind of stuff doesn't happen. That they might find some comfort in the fact that the investigation is progressing and that there, potentially there are answers to questions. Because otherwise, you know, it could cause anxiety in the community. Beyond 100%. The grief, if you know what I mean.
Beyond, exactly. Yeah. No. And at least there's moves being made, there's action being taken, and we now just have to stay quiet and await for the outcome.
Indeed. So, and we'll join with you in expressing our sympathies to the deceased's family and friends and the wider community. Cathaoir Lough, Councillor Niamh Kennedy, thank you very much for your time. And the deceased has been named locally as Eddie Friel, who's in his 60s and lived alone in that bungalow on the Harbourview Drive estate in Killybegs. But an arrest has been made. The investigation is progressing, and passing on our sympathies, we now have to let things take their due course. What a wonderful lady Anne is. She's a breath of fresh air. People should make a small effort and fill out the template letter she's putting on the Highland website. We might stick that on our social media. It might be more accessible there. Well done to Brendan yesterday on the BBC. He done a great job, Greg, from all at Ulster and Donegal Community Games. Yeah, indeed, Brendan is a class act in terms of, generally I like Brendan, of course, but in terms of his sports coverage, and him and Oisin are just a cracking team, in my view, as a listener, because I often see myself outside of the media game, and I'm a radio listener and a radio consumer. I just want to say fair play to the parents of the children of Little Angel School, and I'm hopeful for something similar to be done about Drumbo House, which has been closed for 5 years and no care given about this from government or senior HSE management. They solved the Little Angels problem in months, but this is going on 5 years. Hi, Greg. The man who killed that little boy in the south of the county should have gotten a mandatory 10-year jail sentence without parole and banned from driving for life. Our judiciary, says a listener, is the weakest link in reducing road deaths. Right, lots of stuff we haven't gotten through today. Our phone lines are still on the blink, by the way, and apparently great efforts are being made to correct the issue. It's an external issue outside of our control. So thank you. If you were trying to get through, you probably thought we were being ignorant. We weren't. Lots of you have been reacting, though, on our social media to dangerous driving. I'll get to them in the first hour tomorrow. And also, too, we offered a question proffered a question about tips from last week. I'll remind you of that question and give you some of the responses that you've been giving us on the show tomorrow as well. And the reason I mention that is I don't want you to feel that your efforts have been wasted. It's just sometimes things happen and we get behind a little bit. Okay, so that's where we have to leave it today. Thank you very much indeed for your company. We're back with you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.